Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
All right. Everyone ready? Got your caffeine? Good. Let's do this. I want to pray, just get us started, and then we'll get to know each other a little bit, and then we'll kind of dive into this whole idea of gospel saturation and our geography, what that looks like, and I'll give you the context from which, you know, the perspective I'm going to be talking about just from our own learnings here in Orange County and nationally. But let's pray first. God, thanks for even some of the places, Evansville and Seattle and Elk Grove and those that are here and just thinking about their own geography and beginning to ask questions like, what does it look like to transform our city, not just grow our church? And what, God, could you do if the church collectively got together and started asking those questions and worked around strategies that answered those questions? And so just thanks for this time. I just thank you for this conference. I love the people at Exponential, what wonderful hearts they have to bring people from different tribes, denominations, geographies, places, church planting networks together where we can learn and we can build relationships and connect and just celebrate the good work that we get to partner with you in. So thanks again. We pray these things in your name. Amen. All right. So again, I just introduced myself. I'm Chris Lagerlof, and I'm a catalyst at Mission Orange County, which we're focused here in our county. We have 34 cities, 3.2 million people. And we're relentlessly focused really on helping the church mobilize and multiply in cities to collaborate around collective strategies to impact every man, woman, and child so that they have not just repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ, but we want to see them have increased opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so that's a big part of what we're going to talk about, and it's gospel saturation. How do you do that as the church, and what does that look like? And so we'll have fun, but I want to do kind of a speed dating meets city movement real quick. Just, you know, find out where you're from, who you are. So maybe just your name. In fact, I even have the little, you know, just to help you out. I'm sorry, the projectors here are kind of weak. So, but just name, where you live, and maybe the church organization you serve. Want to start here?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm Seth.
Perfect. Are you sure you don't want Tom Herman from Houston? I think that's like everybody's chasing after him too. So awesome. So let me do a little bit of my story and why I'm passionate about this and in cities and how cities work and where the church fits into all that. And so for a few years I was working with an organization that no longer exists, but we were in about 15 cities nationally. And you know, our focus was bringing kingdom-minded senior pastors and churches together with business leaders to help resource and fund church planters focused on that city. And my job was to launch new cities, and so we got some good stuff started in Long Beach, and now it's called Plant Long Beach in the Bay Area. Now it's kind of under the banner of Transform the Bay for Christ. And then eventually the organization died, and it gave birth to what we're doing here in Mission Orange County. So, you know, that's a biblical principle that, you know, death gives, you know, birth to life. And so, but it was in that period of time, so this was probably about 6 years ago, that we were working in Long Beach, and one of the business guys that was really involved with us was very well connected in the city. He loves Long Beach and wants to see the church thrive there. And, you know, he would bring his friends and his own resources in to make sure that what was going on in Long Beach would be successful. So he invited me to the Long Beach Chamber of Commerce Gala. Okay, so in Long Beach, they're recognized, the Chamber of Commerce is recognized as being one of the best large city chambers in the nation. And I had no desire to go. Anyone ever been to a Chamber of Commerce gala before? You know, so you got to get dressed up, you know, wear the black suit, all that. But I went because I wanted to support my friend Blake, because he had done so much work in Long Beach and was such a, became a good friend. And he invited me, so I went. And what I did not know is that Blake was the president of the chamber at the time, and that night he was passing the baton off to the next chamber president. So I'm at the main table where I'm like one of the honored guests, and there's 900 people there, and you had every CEO, you know, the mayor was there. He introduced me to the mayor at the time, the city council members, the school superintendents, the police chief, the fire chief, the who's who of Long Beach was there. In fact, those of you that have California, grew up here, you might remember Cal Worthington. Remember Cal Worthington and his dog Spot? Go see Cal, go see Cal. He was on Saturday mornings. He'd sell cars. He'd put elephants on a car. He had big. He'd put a lion on the hood, you know. And he was just a big deal and fun. And he was there. And I go, this is legit. Cal Worthington's here. So I thought this was the coolest thing in the world. And they started giving out awards for businesses that were providing good, services to the poor and needy in the community, to making the environment better. That's really what the focus was. And about halfway through the gala, I turned to Blake and I said, "Are there any other pastors here like me?" And he turned to me, and it wasn't the fact that he said no that wrecked me. It's that he said no. Why would they be here? And not that I expect every pastor in every city to show up to every Chamber of Commerce gathering or gala or whatever it is, but the mindset of a businessman really saying, no, the church kind of functions on its own. They're not really on the grid of society. And, this is the room full of gatekeepers and those who are decision makers and have access to a lot of resources and relationships in the city. And so I drove home. I remember driving home. I started weeping. I just, God, we've abandoned our cities. And yet then God reminded me, no, the church is present in the city in guys like Blake. And so... what if the church really understood that one of the methods that they exist for is to mobilize people like Blake to be the church in the different domains of society in the different parts of the city so that the church would be present everywhere? And so it was kind of this twofold conflicted, and I said, that's it. I'm giving my life to this. And so that's kind of, where this whole things started with me, and I've been involved in city movement, and I'm involved with Mission Orange County here, as I mentioned. We're also involved with really Hill Country Launch nationally with some other cities like Buffalo and Chicago, which is called Christ Together. I'm going to show you that model and how that works here in a second. There's about 60 geographies in the U.S. that are connected to Christ Together. Some are way further down the road, like Seattle is just launching. Austin has been at it for a good period of time. Buffalo has. And in some of these cities, we're actually seeing gospel saturation, the percentage of people and gospel saturation rate increase because of the church's focus on the city and mobilizing and multiplying the church. And so we're going to talk a little bit about gospel saturation or city movement. Before I do that, I just want to talk about movements because we hear that and we go, well, gosh, you know what? There really hasn't been a church planting movement in the United States since the 1800s. It's been a long time, and we all have different definitions of what a movement might look like or what a movement might be. So a good buddy of mine, Bob Roberts, who's the pastor at Northwood Church in Texas, has done a lot of research on movements, and so I captured these notes from him just to talk about kind of what we're talking about today, how movements start. They're always Jesus-driven, Jesus-centric. They're not built around an individual or a singular organization or church. Movements are highly personal and societal. We see that in the book of Acts. That's how the gospel spread through large cities into smaller cities, through port towns into places beyond that. We even see the gospel spread when persecution hit the church and the church scattered. The gospel seems to spread best and quickest and fastest in cities, in places where there's a large population. And they move not just through personal relationship, but actually through society. Movements take time. Usually they're built around an apostolic gifting and apostolic leaders. Someone who's a builder and architect and can somehow God's given them the ability to be relentlessly focused on what God's called them to do, but they may not even see the movement actually happen because it may outlive them. But if you look at most movements, somewhere along the way there were people who designed it, built it, and it took off. Movements are led by disciples. This is critical. You can have the greatest church in your city, and we're sitting right now in a great church. The Mariners is about this campus, 8,000 people on a weekend in a city of 260,000 people. That is about 2% of our city that sit in the largest church. And so even Mariners, 260,000 now.
How many come on a weekend?
About 8,000. And they're not all from Irvine, actually. It's more of it's a regional church. So Newport Beach is literally, maybe a driver for JD, about a driver, distance away. On the other side of the toll road is Newport Beach. So Mariners, so there's probably only maybe 1% of Irvine attends Mariners Church. And it's the largest church in Irvine by far. And so, but the idea being Mariners on its own, You know, as great as the church can be, or the facilities and the teaching might be, is not going to saturate this city with the gospel. Disciples will. It's when we release disciples on mission as missionaries in the places they live, work, and play. We'll talk about that in a little bit. They're collaborative, so they involve churches, they involve networks, they involve disciples, people, leaders in cities. Movements tend to surge from the young. We see that in the world today. It's not so much movements focus on evangelism, but in places where, in large cities, we've seen this a lot in the Middle East, where young people are gathering in the city to voice their, have a voice about the future of the country they live in or the city they live in. And this has been something that God's really broken my heart for lately. Last year, millennials actually passed up baby boomers in the number of millennials living in the United States. There's more than baby boomers. And then the percentage of millennials that have a relationship with Christ is anywhere between, I've heard, 4 to 9%. And baby boomers, it's way more than that, like 3 or 4 times more. So one of the things that, you know, scares me personally is we haven't discipled a whole generation. We're losing a whole generation of people because, and I was a youth pastor, I'm guilty of it. You know, I put weird food in blenders and have, you know, my staff drink them and to impress kids and do crazy of it. But I didn't disciple kids. You know, I'm feeling guilty, like, I didn't really disciple kids. So, you know, discipling the next generation is a big deal if we want to see movement happen. Movements are obviously from the Holy Spirit, and they're usually local church-driven. They come out of the church, and the church is really, you know, at the forefront of movement. So, anyways, just to kind of, and why I say all this is because maybe this is an indicator of why we need to focus more on our cities than we do just planting churches. In fact, I would say that a true church planting movement will emerge out of geographical strategies and focus as opposed to just church planting focus. Being city centric as opposed to being church planter centric. And I'll get into that here in a little bit. But really we're going to talk about, and I'm going to give you 7 keys just to building a successful multiplication movement in your city or your geography so that the gospel would be saturated. And here's what I mean by gospel saturation. Simply that a strategy is in place where over time there is a significant increase in how many opportunities every man, woman, and child has to respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ in your city or geography. And for a strategy to be in place, that means leadership has to be in place driving that strategy forward. And for that to take place, it involves, you know, multiple churches and organizations and people to drive that mission forward in your city and geography. And so that's what we're going to talk about. Just how do you do that? 3 years ago, we began that journey here. You know, there's, you know, people ask, John Blue, he's the pastor that I partner with most. They ask us, and you know, with what you do in Orange County, do you have any like competition? Is there anyone else doing it? And the answer is really no, there's not. In fact, in Orange County, most churches don't plant churches. You know, they do, some do campuses. We just don't have we don't have churches that think in terms of multiplication. That's why I love Exponential's Level 5 Multiplying Church, that the whole conversation. What does it mean to be a multiplying church? So we in 3 years have started movements in different cities. Irvine, one of them, about 20 churches are involved. Huntington Beach, Santa Ana, which is 82% Hispanic. So it's one of the most fun cities for us to be a part of and see what God's doing there. And probably one of the more developed cities where gospel saturation is beginning to happen because of the things that they have been conquering and taking and doing strategically. So we'll tie, I'll even tie in some stories to there. But I'm going to just give you 7 principles. And here they are. So the first one is to get your aim right. Okay? Get your aim right. Anybody shoot guns in here? Okay. So have you shot a gun with a scope before? So you understand that, you know, if you look through that scope, it locks onto your target, and you'll be probably a lot more successful at hitting your target if you just look through that scope, right? So for us, and this is what Christ Together is all about, and this is kind of the model about getting your aim right, is we've developed a model to help cities think through how do we saturate our geography with the gospel. And so the why, the target, is gospel saturation, okay? Now, this is important. Because if you changed out saturation and put church planting in there, what would you do? You'd produce some churches. Maybe they wouldn't be focused on gospel saturation. And we all know church planting is expensive and, bless you, and tiring. And so, you know, your focus would become just planting churches. Now, in some places, theology is at the aim. It's at the center. And theology limits us. And sometimes theology gets in the way of us saturating our geography with the gospel. And sometimes theology is the very thing that divides us, not unites us, you know. We've seen that actually in some of the cities that we've worked with. You could put social justice in the center. You see that in a lot of places. And then all of a sudden it becomes about the gathering and the event and the 4 hours on Saturday, the nice things that we're doing and we feel good about. But are we actually making an impact? And one of the things that's even scary to me sometimes is we're mobilizing hundreds of people to do nice things in the city that don't even know how to share their gospel story with their own family members. So what makes us think evangelism is actually really happening? So what we've done is we've kind of shifted it and said, what if the aim were gospel saturation? And then out of that, the method or the how or the why or the what would be these four principles or values. So anyone ever watched the Simon Sinek video, TED Talk video? Write it down, okay? Simon Sinek, S-I-N-E-K, starts with the why, which most organizations and companies start with the what. And that's where they fail. Because the why is what drives us, is what keeps us focused.
S-I-N-E-K?
Yes, S-I-N-E-K. One 17-minute talk, one of the best you'll hear. It's a little outdated because he did it about 7-8 years ago, but the principles are so true. And I think this happens in ministry all the time. A lot of times we get caught up in the best method, the best strategy, the best practice, you know, what the latest hot thing that somebody's doing. And we build, you know, around that instead of building around the why. And so here, why, gospel saturation, four principles. Multiplication, obviously, is the multiplication of disciples. It's the multiplication of missional communities. It's the multiplication of churches. And I really, truly believe in my heart over time, if you focus on a geography and you focus on gospel saturation, you will plant more churches in that geography if you just focus on church planting. One of the main reasons for that, and I think you've seen this in Austin, is it will drive you to ask the question, where is there in our city places that lack spiritual presence or where the church is not making an impact? Or where in our city are things changing drastically and quickly? Maybe, you know, the ethnic makeup or, the economic of it or whatever it is. And all of a sudden you go, we need to plant a church there. We need a missional community there. So give me an example of that. It's something that's happening in real time here in Orange County in a couple cities, but I'll focus on Huntington Beach. Huntington Beach is about 160,000 people. It's a, you know, they call it surf city. So it's kind of like one of our more relaxed, cool, chill places. It's mostly white. You have on the east end, you got an Asian population as it kind of borders Westminster, Fountain Valley, and Garden Grove. But in the middle of the city, almost like an island, there's an area called Oakview. And some people call it Slater Slums, because Slater is a street, the main street that runs by it. It's 12,000 people who are all Hispanic. They all live in apartments, high-density living, very low income. And so some of the churches are doing tutoring and things after school, but there's no church focused on being the church in that area that is an incarnational presence focused on evangelizing and impacting Oakview. So there's about 14 or 15 churches in Huntington Beach involved in that the city there that they've been doing things collectively for the last year and a half. They decided, as they looked at their city, we have to plant a church there or do something there because nobody is. And so they've identified a church planter. They're going to assess him. In fact, we're talking, you know who the church planter is because of Ken, you know, and then train him. And then that they will collectively raise the resources, and not just the resources and the vision to help this person plant, but help them plant well and walk with them in the planting journey. Now, if I'm a church planter and I'm parachuting into a city or I'm planting, well, I would love 12 churches to link arms with me and go, you know what, welcome to our city. And, you know, we're glad you're here. There's the area you're planting a church in, they desperately need a church. And we've been praying for a church. We've been praying for a guy like you. And so over time, when you focus on your geography, it's gospel saturation, it'll lead you to more church planting. It'll lead other churches to engage in the church planting journey. And we're finally beginning, after 3 years, to begin to see that here in Orange County. So multiplication is one piece. Collaboration, obviously, another piece. I talked about one church, and I said you can't saturate it with the gospel. You need a multitude of churches that look different, that have their ministries are different, that really become this beautiful picture of what the church is. And it becomes a John 17 moment where the unity of leadership in the church, what Jesus prayed for, not only is beautiful because they share their resources and vision to impact their city, but because all of a sudden they become a good testimony to the people in their city who think the church, you know, they don't have credibility, or they don't, you know, they know the church doesn't get along or work together. I mean, what if in our cities people saw dozens and hundreds of churches in larger and larger cities working together? What a beautiful testimony that would be to the lost. You've seen that, I mean, again in Austin, you know, last year, how many churches, Michael, 270 right now that are doing the neighboring?
Yes.
Yeah. So they have 270 churches in their city that are equipping the people in their church and mobilizing them to do neighboring, you know, to love about 8 neighbors around them, intentionally build relationships, invite them over to their home, and giving them the freedom and permission to do that. If they do it through block parties, if they do it just knocking on doors. But what you guys did, and I think this is where we miss a lot of times in these strategies, is you went underground the first year, and you brought all the leadership from those churches together, the pastors, and you began to equip and train them to do this in their own life first. So that when they went in front of their church and asked them to do it, you know, they had credibility. And they could tell stories about what God was doing in their own neighborhood through the last year and how they were being intentional about it. And one of the things that's so critical is you know, that we model what we ask our people to do. So that's the idea of collaboration. Mobilization is what I just talked about. It's not just let's do something on Saturday in our city that is good for our city. Mobilization is a mindset that gets into the pastors and leaders of a church to remember and recognize that our job is to equip the saints to do the work of ministry and to mobilize and release them to do that, and not to be a barrier to that. And it, really what it is producing a different kind of disciple. It's a disciple who lives and thinks like a missionary. And so we've become really good at producing attenders in churches, and attenders show up to church, but they don't necessarily become the church Monday, you know, through Saturday. And so it becomes a mobilizing strategy within each church. How do we release the army of God, the army God has given us, to impact the community God's placed us in? And so, you know, there's even different ways and methods to do that. Some churches, they draw circles around their church, a mile or two, depending on their size of their church and the reach of their church. And they begin to look at everything that's in that circle. You know, it could be a school, it could be a jail or a prison, it could be city hall, it could be fire stations or police station, it could be the businesses, neighborhoods, apartment complexes, you know, which is a big deal because, you know, actually people who rent don't attend church as much as people who own because they're transient and they don't connect to churches. And there's a lot of other reasons for that. And so you begin to do that and you realize we got to take ownership for everything that's in that circle. And the best way to do that is to mobilize the people in our church as missionaries into this circle to impact it. So that's the whole idea of mobilization. And then you begin to see churches work together for common good and share responsibility for the things that their city needs. So like Huntington Beach, and Santa Ana is a great example. There's about 20 churches gathering there. You know, they started doing what a lot of cities do, like Love Santa Ana, where they gather every quarter and they mobilize a bunch of people from a bunch of churches and they work with the city to identify projects. The city actually now provides restrooms and dumpsters and trash cans and tools to help, you know, they give them to the churches where they're serving because it's a partnership. But it's gone beyond that now. Now the churches are doing the parent project in schools. And so they've adopted all 56 schools and they're doing parenting classes at night. And they need every church. They need 56 churches in order to accomplish this and be successful. So it becomes a, not just how do we mobilize the people in my church, but how do we collectively mobilize the church in our city to care for our city. And then transformation, last piece is really simply, you know, what I said already is, do we have a definition for what a disciple is, a biblical disciple, and do we have a definition for what disciple making is, and is that what we actually are producing and doing? And if you measure it over time, and there's, you know, one of our guys in Buffalo, Dr. Ryan Cozy, has the largest assessment or survey of evangelicals going right now in the United States of America. He's assessed, you know, well, pretty close to 100,000, several hundreds of churches on their missional behavior. And he can tell you nationally, statistics-wise, well, I wish I brought that slide, that in the evangelical church in America right now, only about 32% of people have a conversation on an annual basis with someone who's lost about spiritual things. About 42% are intentionally even building a relationship. And so he can tell you, and he can do this for your church, but it begins to really point out what kind of disciple are we producing, and beginning to measure in our city and our church is more than just how many people are showing up and the amount of money that they're giving. Does that all make sense? Any questions on that? But you see how it all comes out of the why, right? And if that's the why, you're going to plant a lot of churches over time. And the church is going to become more of a mobilizing entity in your city. And you're going to produce a different kind of disciple. And collaboration is going to begin to happen. So it's getting your aim right is the first thing. And, you know, and the question really is, again, if instead of how do I grow my church, how do we transform our city? And if you get the church together to begin asking that question, it'll change your strategies. If you can try this on your own staff, or your own leadership, or your core team, you can take, you know, 5 or 6 people and put them in a group and go, you know, the elders in our church just decided that we're going to have to grow the church by 25% in 3 years. Because, you know, we want to grow. There's great opportunities that are in front of us. Come up with a strategy and how we're going to do that. And you can take another group of 5 people and go, the church elders said in 3 years we want to begin to transform our city and begin to impact our city at a deeper level. Come up with a strategy and how we're going to do that. And then ask them to present their strategies. They're going to look completely different. And I think what you'd see is the church growth strategy isn't as fun as exciting as the church that let's transform our city strategy. That's actually something you can try, and just it'd be a fun conversation with your staff. We do that. We use that as a tool, and it's really fun. We get the big white post-it notes out, and they present, and everyone wants to now be on the let's transform our city, you know, because that's really what God's placed you in the heart of what the church is. So disciple our city, make disciples in our city. So that's just like, yeah. Well, I go back to saturation. Over a period of time, can we show that... that the saturation rate, that repeated opportunities and more opportunities for every man, every woman, every child has increased for them, not just to hear and respond to the gospel, because that's evangelism, but to see it. And that's a picture of what the church looks like when it collaborates. That's when they've been served or cared for by the church. That's when the church has done something meaningful for them in their life. And so it would be, you know, over time in your city, can you collectively show that gospel saturation is happening. In Buffalo, they can show that. In Austin, they can show that. In Columbia, South Carolina, they can show that. And I know I've been asked, we talk about this all the time. What does a transformed city look like? I think at the end of the day, God has a heart to restore all things, beginning with my life, right? And that includes our cities. And so it's when, but it's also when we see the church become a grid on society, and actually the church is released to impact the city, and disciples are made that are city-focused, not just church-focused. But really it goes to saturation. So if you actually did a study, and you can, on your city, and there's 7% of your cities, you know, they're evangelicals, you know, and in 5 or 10 years you can move that to 10%, then you can move it to 12%, then you're going to hit what they call a tipping point. Hey, Daniel, you're going to hit a tipping point. And that's when city transformation will begin to happen. It's that tipping point, and you've got to raise the saturation rate of the gospel in your city. Does that make sense?
It does, subtle, but it's still very powerful.
No, a decrease in that, yes. Yeah, and where churches have solutions and strategies to help break people free from that, yes, and where they're not just depending on the city. We were just last week with our mayor, Pro Tem, here in Irvine, and some of the churches. It was a really special time because she talked to us not like a politician, she's a Christ follower, but like a disciple and missionary about the vision God's given her for National Day of Prayer. The city hall has a lawn where you can fit 2,000 or 3,000 people, and our city does nothing in Irvine. In fact, when we started gathering the churches here in Irvine, John and I were the ones introducing the pastors to each other. And we're like, that's not right. These pastors don't even know each other in the same city. So we said, let's just spend the next year building relationships. Because if we don't get the relationship part right, we'll never get to the mission part. Because relationship always trumps mission. And you got to know that when you're gathering the spiritual leaders in your city, you might attract them to something that, here's the idea, gospel saturation. But if you don't build the relationship over time, they will just fall off. And they will disappear, because what keeps them coming back is the relationship. So the mayor is sharing this, and her dream wasn't 2,000 people. And because sometimes we mistake participation for transformation, and we celebrate 2,000 people showed up to pray. Her dream was this would be the beginning where evangelicals in our city see each other. They see that their neighbors are here praying, and that they begin to leave that point or place and leave like missionaries to go back and carry the message into the neighborhoods that they live in, because she understands that neighboring is the best way to transform a city. If you read The Art of Neighboring, that's kind of one of the principles behind it. But I think, you know, and I think, Michael, you would agree with this. For us, it's gospel saturation. The end game is this. It's about producing biblical disciples that are impacting our cities, that are loving their neighbors, that are the church being represented all throughout the city, and that the church then becomes a gathering place where we scatter and we equip. And I think the pastor's job is to equip people to live on the mission of God. And that's really what Ephesians 4 says, you know, equip the saints to do work of ministry. So, anyways, I'm on a tangent. But clarity is so critical in getting your aim right, because if you don't have it, you'll just end up focusing on the wrong things. And so gospel saturation is one of those things that keeps you focused, and the strategies will build out from that conversation. Just a couple things to consider, and then we'll move on to the second thing. Don't let dollars limit your focus, okay? And what I mean by that, one of the things that I think's happened in church planting especially is it takes X amount of dollars to plant a church in your city. And so the model is actually not big. It's limited because it's dependent on dollars, right? And so I think in your cities, you got to find ways to be innovative and creative. You know, we're seeing this in the Silicon Valley right now because, you know, it's just the mindset, the startup mindset. But bivocational is becoming more and more popular. You know, we need to raise up an army of bivocational pastors that are, you know, Daniel knows this. You know, you're Latino, you're Hispanic, right? You know, there's not a lot of money going to Hispanic church planting. You know, it's really sad. It breaks our heart here in Orange County. You know, I can say this. I've lived here my whole life. My heart just like it saddens when I see the church become a luxury for the affluent. And all our resources go into suburban, mostly white churches. And our mindset shifts to the way that we're going to impact, you know, places that lack the resources. We're just going to bring a bunch of people in there and do nice things. What if we just resource the people who are already incarnational doing there to do those things and plant it and help them, you know, create new missional communities and focuses? You know, so we have 1.4 million Latinos in Orange County. That's 35%, and that number is not slowing down. The future of the church looks like Daniel across the country, you know, and we got to get behind that, and that's a part of our cities. They're becoming more ethnic, more urban, more and younger. And we're losing sight of that because we're not focusing our time and energy and resourcing, you know, where the church has the most potential to explode. And really, the next movement of God, I truly believe this, in America, will be led by Latinos. Do you believe that? I do. I really do. So I know. So part of it is you got building relationships with the Latino leadership in your cities. And especially not first generation, but also second generation, because first generation pastors in our cities here in Orange County and Latino churches have done a real good job of preserving the language and the culture, but not as good as focusing on preserving the gospel. And the byproduct of that is they haven't discipled the next generation. And the byproduct of that is there's not a lot of young leaders in Latino churches emerging as the next generation church leadership. And that's we're going to pay a deep price for that if we don't get that right. And, you know, it's true here, too, with Asians. You know, we have 680,000 Asians in Orange County, and that population is growing pretty quick. The only population not growing is people that look like me in Orange County. We're at 1.9% birth rate, and you need 2.3% birth rate in the United States to sustain an ethnic race. I don't know if you knew that. And a lot of my friends are marrying people that are in mixed marriages in different ethnicity. And so, you know, the landscape of the family and the church is changing very quickly. So I'm on a tangent. I'm sorry. So don't let dollars limit your focus. You've got to find new innovative ways to plant churches that have the heart of God for our city. For the pastors in here, I already said this, but your focus has got to shift from being the biggest church in the city to churching the city. That's a mobilizing mindset, a releasing mindset, to release the church and the disciples into the city. And here's the third one. Get your primary customer right. We learned this the hard way when we launched 3 years ago. We decided, let's just get a bunch of church planters, and that's how we're going to accomplish what God's called us to do. And when you call a meeting for church planters, you don't always get the healthiest people in the world. You get a lot of guys who maybe they just transitioned from the last church and it wasn't a very good transition, and they've got 10 people in the church saying, we'll go with you. And they're kind of getting desperate, and they're realizing we need to meet as often as we can so we can pass an offering basket so that I can make an income. And they don't come with healthy churches. They kind of come alone. And it's so what we did is we shifted the paradigm. We said, we can't focus on church planters. Let's focus on churches that want to plant churches, healthy churches, churches that we want to see reproduced because they're actually making disciples. And that's a big deal. If you want to reproduce and multiply churches, make sure you're multiplying, you're working with churches that are producing good disciples. Otherwise, you're going to just produce churches that are doing the same thing. And so that's been our strategy the last 3 years, and we developed relationships with about 100 churches in Orange County, and we've been able to train a lot of them to become disciple-making churches and church-planting churches. And now we're getting church planters from those churches. And what we've realized is over time, that's how you build a culture of church planting in your geography. Instead of focusing on the church planter, focus on the church and help them plant churches and catalyze a church planting spirit in them. And then the church planters will come with those churches. Does that make sense? So anyways, let's get your aim right. Next one is, I'm going to skip this, not important, is build a playground. And what I mean by that is churches, in your cities, are churches, when they invite other churches into a conversation about, you know, taking the hill, are they good at showing up and doing that together? Typically not. Churches tend not to work well together. They need a third-party convener. And so what I mean by that is a playground. A sandbox, some people say that. I like playground because playgrounds have things that kids can play with and toys that they can get their hands on. You know, and so, you know, when I say playground, I mean being a third-party convener that can convene the church around conversation to come up with collective strategies for impacting their city or geography, that can help build relationship, but also provide systems or tools or resources that help them be successful at what they do. So, for example, for us, with multiplication, we have now in Orange County, we have our own assessment, and we serve churches in Orange County who want to plant churches. We do 2 assessments a year. Sometimes 3. And the cool thing about it for us is our assessment team, which is made up of pastors, psychologists, business leaders, therapists, church planners, they're all from Orange County. So it's context on context. So I'm not sending somebody to New York to get assessed, hoping they get recommended to plant a church, but the assessment team in New York has no idea what the culture in Orange County is like. So that's and then those that get recommended to plant, we train for 6 months. Now, we didn't design the curriculum. We partner with a group called Multiply. They've put a lot of money and time and energy into it. It's wonderful curriculum. There's other curriculums out there, and it's really more, it's not just curriculum. It's really a process, and it's coaching. We also have roundtables every month where we gather church planting churches and churches or church planters. We also train churches to become church planting churches. So we've built tools and resources to serve the church so that they can accomplish this mission. Because most churches don't have access to good training or anyone on their staff who can train or anyone on their staff who's ever planted a church. They don't know where to go for assessment. And so what we decided is in Orange County, there's no one else doing this really locally who's here, that this is one of the services we can provide the church to help them accomplish church planting in our cities. So, you know, so here's essentials to building a playground. Your mission must be clear. I mentioned that. What you're calling the people to be a part of and focus on. Second, I mentioned it. Build great relationships. Third is mirror your city. So, invite people onto your leadership team or who are going to be a part of what you're building who look like the city you live in. And if you don't know what your city looks like, go to the local elementary school and go look at the 4th grade classroom. That's who your city is. Right about that age is kind of what your city's becoming and who your city is. In my daughter's 4th grade classroom a couple of years ago, it was so diverse. It just dawned on us. We need to build, a leadership team that reflects what that classroom looks like. So we have, working with Hispanic pastors. Templo Cavario is one of our key partners in Santa Ana. Many of our Asian pastors, Indian, be thinking, if we want to impact our city, we have to work with leaders and individuals who look like our city, who have relationships with others like them. So mirror your city. So that's building a playground. Now, I kind of talked about this So building the right team, you need to build it with kingdom-minded leaders and evidence of leaders who are investing in kingdom-minded things that, you know, if you're working with a church that's never put money in the church planting or never planted a church, they're probably not going to do much with church planting. So if you want to see a bunch of churches planted as part of your strategy in your city, invite churches who have the abilities, resources, and vision, and really history with church planting. And invite healthy churches, because that's what you want to reproduce. And that's a good starting point. You know, build it not just on pastors and churches, but also church planters. And this is really important. A lot of our time and energy we spend on existing churches that we're trying to help them think through their operating system. I personally think the operating system in the church in the West right now is broken, and that we need to rethink what the operating system looks like, because I think we just work so hard in the church and we get the same results. Church planters are the future of cities and collaboration. Church planters think collaboratively. They are the future of what the church is going to look like in cities. So when you invest in church planters, you're actually changing what the church is going to look like in your city 10, 15, 20 years from now. If you spend all your time and energy on existing churches that have been around for a long time or churches that are stuck, you might be able to help them a little bit, but they're probably going to struggle to change their operating system. Church planters will build and plant their church on a different operating system, more city-focused, more about geographic saturation, more about multiplying, you know, churches and disciples and releasing the body of Christ. And so so build it around church planters. I'm going to give you an example of this, and I'll run out of time, but this is so important. So here in Irvine, there's 11 guys planting churches right now. And we brought them all together here at Mariners and told Mariners, we'll bring them together, we'll get the lunch, we'll set up the room, you just show up and bless them. So Kenton came in and he blessed them. Kyle Zimmerman, the lead pastor, the campus pastor here, he came. His wife came. The wife's group actually, of all those spouses, they formed a group. They meet every month now. They're caring for each other. It was really fun to see. And you got 11 guys planting churches. A couple of them just launched in the last week. And when a lot of the tension here in our nation really began to build, you know, racial tension in our cities with shootings and everything, an Asian pastor, a Latino pastor, and a black pastor in our city, all church planters, decided we're going to do something about it. It wasn't the existing big churches in our city. It was those three guys. And so the first thing they did is they called the church to a meeting with our mayors, our council members, our police chief. They called it a Tied Together event. They did this all on their own. And they got 28 churches in the room, about 200 people. And there's about 30 police officers there. And the Tied Together things, we all tied ourselves together. And the voices that spoke up front were three of those church planters. We got to do something, and then an older church in the city who's been here the longest got to do something. And then what happened after that is they decided we're going to do a march in Irvine. And it's a march that's going to be about a different kind of voice than we're hearing in the media and, you know, in our society today, about what it means to love your neighbors and that the only strategy for our cities is love. And it was these three church planters in our city, and they pulled about 1,000 people together, and they got the Orange County Sheriff's and Irvine Police Department, and they wanted the march to happen. Which, like, if I'm a police officer, I'm afraid of what could happen to them. It was a very peaceful march. And after the march, there was a big party. Several, you know, about, you know, probably at that point, 500, 800 evangelicals in our city saying, you know, this is the message we want people to hear in our city. It was church planters who did that because they think differently and they respond differently. And so I'm just saying, build, you know, you want to see saturation happen, get a church plan, get church planters involved. All right, just a couple more things. Your mindset must be kingdom and missional. Here's what I mean by that. I think for all, those of us who've been in the church a long time, this is the framework or lens we tend to look through when we think about how to accomplish mission or how to get a church strategy or a strategy down the road. And it's really all the arrows focused on what? Growing or building the church, right? And they're focused, you know, on that. And so basically what happens is it becomes about the gospel of salvation. You know, that's really the atonement for my sins, or, you know, it becomes personal about me, and then it becomes discipleship, becomes about membership or programs or events or curriculums. all pointed at what, you know, the church can provide or what the church does, or focused on what the disciple can do in the church. Society, there's an indifference, there's a disengagement. It's nice, we're in the city. It's beginning to ask the question, what if we didn't exist in the city more? Would the city even miss us? There's a lot of churches, if they close this Sunday, I don't even think the city would know, right? You'd want your church, if you closed down, your city would be grieving, you know, because of the difference you're making and the impact you're having. It's building, your focus becomes on building. You know, over time, it becomes an institution. And everything becomes about sustaining what you've built. And, you know, dollars and disciples don't get released to impact the city. So that's a church framework. So when you look through that lens, what are you perpetually doing? A lot of times you're just building a church and you're sustaining a church, as opposed to a kingdom framework where the arrows are pointing towards the world. How are we going to impact the world? So it's the gospel of the kingdom, here and now, arrival of present reality. My definition of the kingdom is God's sovereignty over everything, beginning with me. A lot of times what we teach is the gospel of salvation is it's about God's sovereignty over my life, and then everything else, you know, isn't as important. So it's a whole different switch on what lens we look through. The disciple, sons and daughters of God, hear and obey. You know, teaching people to go out and live out and fulfill the Great Commission in their own life and to be a part of that. Focused on not the church, but the city, the globe, the world. Acts 1:8. Society, domains, good of society. You know, all cities are built on different domains. The church exists in those domains and disciples that live and work in those places. The reconciliation of all things. You know, God has called us out to be reconcilers in our city, in the places He's placed us. And then the church, it's global. It's ecclesia, called out ones, family of God. Do you see how that framework changes the way you see your city, the way you see the church, the way you see discipleship? That's critical. So it's beginning to look through a kingdom framework. So when you look at your city, when you look at your geography, begin to look through that lens. How are we going to impact our city? Because we have the gospel of the kingdom. We make a disciple that isn't only about our church, but that lives on as a missionary. The city is important to us, that we exist to serve and care for the city, to build relationships in the city. We talk about our city. I mean, a lot of churches don't even mention their city's name on a regular basis or pray for their city. You know, one of the things that it's been fun for us to see happen with a lot of the churches we work with is we teach them and train them. Every week, pray for a different church in your city by name. And don't pray for the one that's struggling, and that's why you're praying for them. Pray because they're doing great, and you want your church to realize there's other churches in our city that we're working with, that we care about, that we're praying for. And when churches all begin to do that together in the same city, it's pretty radical what can happen. Because then what happens is, oh, I was at, you know, Pastor, I visited this church, and they prayed for you on Sunday. You know how meaningful that is to that pastor and to that church? And all of a sudden, you see the unity of the church begin to flourish in that city. So it's just about a framework, looking through a kingdom framework versus a church framework. And here's kind of how it plays out. So this is kind of a comparing contrast. You know, on the left, it would be more, this is a church framework, how we think in the church today. On the right, this is more kingdom, more missional. So event-driven versus relationship-driven. So projects versus people. You know, what churches have become really good at is rallying people around doing a project. Let's go paint a house on Sunday. But we don't talk about the people who live in that house and how to build a relationship with them. Or what it might be is short-term versus long-term. So developing a long-term strategy, and this is where gospel saturation becomes critical, that over time the gospel will be saturated in the area that you're focusing on and where the strategies that you're focused on. So short-term, long-term. Drive-by. In some cities, you don't say that. Versus park it, incarnational, being present. Real quick story in Santa Ana, a bunch of the pastors we work with gathered with a bunch of the principals because they're doing this parent project in the schools, and they're doing parenting classes. And Santa Ana is 82% Hispanic, and parenting's a big issue. And there's 117 gangs in the city of Santa Ana. And it's 340,000 people. It's the youngest city in America. It's the third most densely populated city in America. You know, those things all together just create lots of problems. And it's in a crisis. And so the one of the pastors asked the principals, how have you seen the church, you know, bless you or serve you? And he goes, well, every year in August or September when school's about to start, they'll call or just show up and they'll bring backpacks. And they bring them in trucks and trailers and they take pictures of them and they unload them. And I'm going, oh my gosh, my church does this. And you know, and I know why they're taking pictures, because we go to next Sunday, we show it on the screens and go, look what we did. Eleanor is the principal's name. And she goes, what we do is we store them. And, you know, so now she has to get her, you know, staff to put them in closets and stuff. And, you know, and then I start calling my other friends who are principals. And I go, do you need any backpacks? Because we're all backpacked out. So we just created a burden for that principal. And we think we're doing something really good. And it feels good. And the follow-up question was, what could they have done? You know, how could the church have served you? So she said this, and this is the incarnational thing, the long-term, the relationship thing. Called us and asked us what we needed. Our kids, you know, it's 95% of the kids in Santa Ana are Hispanic. They don't speak English well. They need dictionaries. They don't have dictionaries. But dictionaries aren't as fun to give to kids as backpacks, but it's what they need. Now, I'm not saying if your church does backpacks, the school you work with doesn't need backpacks. There's many schools who need backpacks. But it's just the mindset shift of we think we know what they need, as opposed to understanding and building a missional focus and strategy that really impacts them over time and leads to things that go beyond the backpack. You know, a couple other things real quick just because of time. Releasing resources, releasing the body of Christ. Says look at what we did as opposed to look at what we're doing. You know, partnerships in the city with schools, with other churches. I know of one large church in this area that would go into an area in Santa Ana and they'd clean up the streets across the street from a church that's been there for many years, that's struggling, that doesn't have a lot of money, that's working to fight the gang problem in their community. They have limited resources. And the credibility, the pastor told us, the credibility of our church has really been hurt by that church that comes in from another city to serve us, and they've never even talked to us. And people around us are wondering why we don't do that. Well, that, you know, that's not fun to see a church who's there, present, just trying to fight for their life and want to not partner with the church that, you know, comes in from the outside and does something. You know, it's that look at what we did, look at what we're doing. Impress the community, transform or bless the community, centralized, controlled, decentralized. And as I said earlier, off the grid of society as opposed to being the church being on. So you see, this is more of a kingdom lens. I just want to give you something more practical to see it through. This is more of how we tend to think as in the church. And this is where gospel saturation will happen in any geography over time. So that's your mindset must be kingdom and missional. I got 1 minute to give you the other three. So the third one is this. Unlock the third dimension of your city. And what I mean by that is this. Simply, just because you do a demographic study doesn't mean you understand who your city really is or who your city's really becoming. You have to, as a pastor and spiritual leader in your city, and if you want to see gospel saturation happen, you personally have to saturate yourself in the lostness of your city, where the brokenness in your city exists the most, and know the people and communities where that's happening. One example of that is a church planner we work with here in Irvine. He sat down with us. He gave us his prospectus. He did his demographic study. It was right on. It's everything the census in 2010 said about the city of Irvine. The number of Asians, the number of Hispanics, the number of blacks, the number of whites, the number of married singles, this, that, the other thing. And I asked him, where are you planting your church? He goes, the Heritage Park Community Center. I said, oh my gosh, I can walk there from my house. I know that place really well. And I said, I looked at his prospectus, and I go, you know, right across the street from your church is the only place in Irvine where we have government-subsidized housing. And it's where we have actually a gang problem. We have drug problems. We have many single moms who live there. The police finally put a substation there. Never put a substation anywhere else in Irvine. And the police would tell you the reason they put a substation there isn't because they need to have more boots on the ground to fight crime. It's because what happens in places like this, and we're seeing this all over the country right now, is that when police drive around in places where there's a lot of tension, and they're driving in their cars, they're seen as, you know, a lot of times being authoritative, and not seen as, you know, being friendly, and so on. So they decided we're going to put a substation here so that our officers can walk through the neighborhood, play football with the kids. And I'm going, this is like a church planting strategy. You know, like let's build relationships with the community instead of just show up and do our thing. And what happened is over time, it changed the community a little bit. Well, I asked the church planner, I go, do you know that was there? Because there's 8,000 people living there. He's, I had no idea. Because demographic studies don't tell you what's across the street. And so a lot of times as pastors and spiritual leaders, we have to find those places and walk. You know, that place needs a church, but it needs a church that knows that they're there and that they exist and what their needs are and what the problems are. And if our hearts don't break for places like that in cities, then you know what? Gospel saturation won't happen in our cities. So spiritual leaders need to rise up and spend time with lost people and where lost people hang out in places. You know, and that's really that unlocking the third dimension. And if you do that, and if the church collectively does that, like as we talked about earlier, you're going to start to plant churches in places that lack the greatest spiritual presence. There may be a church there, but they may be struggling so much, and maybe they've lost their vision because, you know, and usually when churches lose their vision is when they stop hanging out with lost people, because vision always comes from a lost world. So if you're in a church where, you know what, our vision is kind of, it's stuck, and, you know, we're not reaching lost people, then you got to go hang out with lost people. You're not going to reach lost people if you don't spend time with them, because your church isn't going to spend time with them. And so that's that whole third dimension in your city. And church planting will naturally emerge out of that work and out of spending time in those spaces and places. The next one is going deep and wide. That has to happen for transformation to happen. It's being city-centric, not just church plant-centric. You can plant a lot of churches in your city and see no impact. And you might just move a lot of, you know, church followers and attenders around. But if you plant churches that have depth to them, that are making a different kind of disciple, a biblical disciple like we talked about, that are engaged in the city, that gospel saturation's at their heart, that have a heart for the lost and the broken, if you plant a bunch of those churches in your city, it'll change your city over time. Especially because, as we talked about earlier, church planters are the future of collaboration in cities and the future of what the church is going to look like. And so it's planting deep and wide. And it's reproducing and multiplying churches that have that kind of heart. And then last is develop an effective ecosystem to serve your customer. I already talked about that. You know, it's for here in Orange County, this is what we've developed. It's just different tools and resources we provide churches so they can plant well, so they can collaborate in their city, so they can envision what God might do if the church gets together and collaborates collectively to focus on gospel saturation. We even have church assessment. We can tell you the missional impact you're having in your community and how ready you are to missionally impact it. And we measure that with churches, and churches, you know, over time every year take the same survey, and they see an increase in an area or they see a decrease. They know what to teach on. They know what curriculum they need to get in their small groups. They know how to equip the people who they're making disciples and so on. So anyways, I just threw a lot at you. I'm sorry. If you want the PowerPoint, you can leave your email address, and I'll send it to you. Any questions before we leave? Or I'll be around, too, so, because it's like 5 minutes beyond time. So, anyways, thanks. It was fun. Yeah. You're welcome.